We now only have one old man trying to be president of the United States.
We've got a middle-aged woman and an elderly man.
She's firmly in Gen X, so that's an improvement as far as I'm concerned.
I'm excited.
I'm slightly less trepidatious about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Especially watching Trump flailing. I think it's too early to tell whether his team will be able to recover and actually have attacks that are really working.
Recently, I heard he said, you won't need to vote again once I get in.
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean?
That's so stupid. His team is certainly trying to spin it. They're like, oh, he doesn't mean that he's going to be a fucking dictator. Well, it sure sounded like his plan is to be a dictator.
He wasn't thinking about what he was saying then.
Yeah. Verbal diarrhea falling out of his mouth 24/7. He is a useful idiot. The real fear is the people that will line up behind him and use his useful idiotness to implement Christian theocracy.
Mm.
You've heard of Project 2025? That's what they want to do.
I've heard of that. I don't really know what it means.
It's basically a roadmap for the Christian nationalists to completely take over the government, defund a whole bunch of stuff like the Department of Education, to get rid of regulations, a combination of American libertarianism and Christian nationalism combined together in a very ugly package that is frankly frightening. So Trump has been trying to distance himself. I don't know anything about that, which is kind of stupid because quite a few from his cabinet are part of the Heritage Foundation who put together Project 2025.
Okay.
And then he just picked J.D. Vance as his VP, who wrote the foreword to a book written by the president of the Heritage Foundation.
I've seen lots of memes going around about J.D. Vance. I don't really know what it's about. Did he fuck a couch?
All right. He wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy, and a satire account said, in this book, J.D. Vance admits to fucking a latex glove in between the couch cushions of a couch. And everyone went, okay, sure. And it didn't say that at all. But it did take on his life as its own, and everybody is calling him a couch fucker.
So it's not something that actually happened.
No, but he does say plenty of dumb stuff. Like he said that the Democrats are run by childless cat ladies.
So stupid.
And that Kamala can't be a president because she doesn't have children.
And yet she still looks after children. She's a parent.
She is a parent. She had two stepchildren, and her husband's ex-wife has even said, hey, she's been a great co-parent. And of course, the racist dog whistles are coming out. Yesterday, Trump did a sit-down talk with the National Association of Black Journalists and made an absolute ass of himself. Vice President Harris's mom is from the country of India.
Right.
Her father is of African descent. I think he was from Jamaica.
Okay.
And so she is biracial. And Trump was like, she used to be an Indian and now she's a black person in front of a room full of black American journalists. It didn't go down well. But Trump wasn't supposed to win in 2016. He did.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't trust the American people.
No, the truth doesn't seem to matter.
Another problem is that in many states, there have been people who deny the validity of the 2020 elections. I've gotten positions on the electoral boards who certify the elections. We already know these people have no relationship to reality. I don't trust them.
Well, we're roasting Saints episode 24.
Oh my God. I had that transcript you sent me. These fuckers. I will fully admit, I didn't listen to all of it. I read it, but I didn't listen to it because just the Mormonism.
It is pretty bonkers.
And these are the kind of bullshit redirects that I got for my whole fucking life.
And it is a massive redirect, one after the other in this episode, isn't it?
It is.
Steve Harper, what a tool.
I'm pretty sure I used the Australian word cunt.
Cunt.
Let's get into the clips. I got some shit to say.
Steve, can we start out with why is Joseph Smith in Liberty Jail?
There are sort of a variety of answers to the question. The simplest way to answer it is people hate him. The legal answer to the question is because powerful people who want him under their thumb have found a legal way to get and hold him in jail. Unlike today, in Joseph Smith's time, it wasn't common for prisoners to be held in jail for a long time, unless you're being held on some capital charge. They typically let you go, and you're supposed to show up at the next term of the circuit court. But here, they have worked really hard to find a dubious grounds for charging Joseph Smith with treason.
Okay, the first thing is they fully admit that what happened was legal to put him in jail. And second, they are conflating a trial with a preliminary hearing. There was a preliminary hearing in which they found that there was enough evidence to hold him. Now, they point out that usually you would come back on your own recognizance, blissfully leaving out something that Joseph Smith was well known for doing. You remember the Kirtland banking thing?
Right.
Okay, so I pulled these tidbits from Wikipedia. In February of 1837, Samuel D. Rounds swore a writ against Smith and Sidney Rigdon for illegal banking and issuing unauthorized bank paper. At a hearing on March 24th, the court found sufficient evidence for the case to go to trial. In October, Smith and Rigdon were tried in absentia.
Ooh.
You know what that means?
They weren't there, but they tried them anyway because they pissed off somewhere.
Yeah, they weren't there because they fucked off to Canada. They were each found guilty and fined $1,000. This was in 1837. And then in 1838, there was another warrant issued for Smith's arrest on charges of banking fraud. And what happened? Smith and Rigdon fled Kirtland for Missouri on the night of January 12th, 1838. This guy had proven himself to be a flight risk.
Right.
He was not going to show up. And what did he do when he finally got a chance? This particular time, he fucked off to Illinois, and they spent years trying to get his ass back to Missouri. So he was being held because he was a serial escapist.
He's slippery.
Yeah, he's a slippery fucker, and he would promise to come back when the circuit court was back in the area. No, he wouldn't. So they were going to hold his ass so he could actually be tried.
They're totally sidestepping that there were lots of other reasons why they tried him for treason than just this whole bit that they referred to from Daniel. That is a popular Mormon trope.
That actually kind of goes to the second clip.
How do you commit treason against a state?
Somebody testifies that they heard Joseph Smith say that the prophecy of Daniel, that the kingdom of God will roll forward like a stone cut out of a mountain. And it will crush all nations, right? It will
consume the earth.
Yeah.
Right.
The judge says to the court clerk, after hearing this testimony, write that down. That's a strong point for treason. One of the lawyers for Joseph Smith says, Judge, then you had better make the Bible treason.
There was a whole war, remember?
Yeah, they're conveniently leaving that out. The question is posed, why is he being charged with treason? And they're saying, well, because he said something out of the Bible. And obviously that's not treason. They left out the fact that the Mormon militia, which was very well known to be run by Joseph Smith, went and attacked the state militia, wherever the place was, thought they were attacking just civilians, but it turns out it was a militia.
Right.
They also were stealing their neighbor's goods because they didn't have enough stuff for their own to do the law of consecration. If you remember, at the end of the Mormon War, one of the generals was there at what was called the Lord's Storehouse.
Right.
You know, it was a shack, but he was gathering all the stuff that these people had stolen. He also says, I didn't think you could commit treason against the state. The fucking constitution of many states, including Missouri, have within their constitution what treason is and the punishment. You can commit treason against the state, you can commit treason against this country, or you can commit treason against both. So this was a charge of treason against the state of Missouri. Here's a little snippet I got. In the early years of the American Republic, several states adopted nearly identical provisions in their constitutions, including Missouri in 1820. This happens before 1838. So this clause in the state constitution authorized Missouri officials to charge Joseph Smith and his companions with having committed treason against the state of Missouri, rather than rely on the federal courts to pursue the charge under the treason clause of the United States Constitution. He was charged with treason because he was suspected of treason. Again, this was the preliminary hearing. This was not the fucking trial.
Right.
They're acting like this was the trial and they charged and convicted him. No, he was charged with treason and he was held because he would fuck off as soon as he could. But they don't fucking mention that.
Yeah.
Then they act like, oh, it was just because Joseph Smith said something from the book of Daniel. Well, yes and no. He expounded upon it. He said literally that the kingdom of God was going to come and wipe the United States from the planet. So they act like that was the only reason he was charged with treason, because they only want to talk about what they want to talk about and they ignore reality.
Similar to what you're saying, that I think is a very good probable cause for holding a trial for treason would be that he essentially commanded an army.
Exactly.
There were these local militias set up, but because they were all full of Mormons, he essentially commanded them.
That's exactly what happened. Hell, we see that later during the Nauvoo period, he fucking declares himself to be Lieutenant General, which is the highest rank he could fucking possibly be. He had the designs of being the big, powerful guy. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't until the Nauvoo period when the Council of 50 consecrated him to be emperor for life over America. And that was his plan, which, interestingly enough, leads very well into the next clip.
He's just had the hardest year of his life. And while he's in the jail, he reflects on it and talks about that when we get a little power or authority, as we suppose we almost always exercise it unrighteously. He contrasts that with priesthood power, which cannot, he says, be exercised unrighteously.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is indeed. It's one of the most fascinating things he ever revealed. We sometimes say absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's not true, because the only beings in the universe who have absolute power don't exercise it arbitrarily or unrighteously. Just about all men, as soon as they get a little authority or a little power, abuse it. And therefore, no power can or ought to be maintained by virtue of the priesthood, except by the Christ-like attributes, the Christ-like way Christ exercises power.
That's a great point.
Is it, Sarah?
No, it's not, because what did the dumb motherfucker do? He was already having affairs and using his prophetic mantle to coerce women to start up a bullshit bank and lose all the saints their money. Shortly in the future, he would use his priesthood to set himself up as the de facto king and ruler of Nauvoo. Uh-huh. This man was one of the most corrupt motherfuckers ever. Again, amazingly like Trump.
Right.
It's funny these Mormons talking about priesthood power not being exercised unrighteously. The leaders of the Mormon church, bishops, stake presidents, and elder scrum leaders, Boy Scout leaders, that are using their priesthood authority to molest children, to sexually and coerce people in their congregation, to commit affinity fraud, where they're like, oh, well, I'm a Mormon, you're a Mormon, so you can trust me. And then they fucking take their money and they go to jail. And these men all supposedly have the priesthood, all selected by a higher priesthood member who has the gift of discernment of being able to recognize whether these assholes are good, righteous men or not. They've seen this in the news. It's happening every fucking day.
I know.
But they have the gall to say, oh, well, because priesthood power can't be used unrighteously. Motherfucker, the non-existent priesthood power is used unrighteously on an hourly basis, and you're an idiot.
Uh-huh. Even if you take it as when they do bad things, they weren't using priesthood power, if that's the argument you're going to run with,
what's the fucking point?
If you can't tell what priesthood power is, why even talk about it?
It's the same thing they do when they're talking about the prophet speaking as a prophet or speaking as a man.
Right.
If you can't tell until 50 years after the motherfucker is dead and the church has decided that what they said was problematic, what's the fucking point of a prophet?
Steve's just rattling these talking points off so smoothly, and Sarah's just like, oh, that's interesting. There's no thought going in there at all.
That's because a priesthood holder has told her, oh, this is how it is. And she is a good Mormon girl who's like, oh, that's amazing. That's wonderful. I'm so glad that you've blessed my life with your priesthood wisdom.
It's so frustrating, isn't it? It really is frustrating.
Yeah. BYU is opening up a medical school. Their focus is going to be on issues that are important to the church. And people are just having a field day. They're like, oh, they're going to be studying essential oils. Oh, they're going to be studying the healing powers of consecrated virgin olive oil. Already science degrees from BYU. Apparently not really that well respected. And now you're going to try and get a fucking medical doctorate from there?
Right.
It's going to be a joke. Beholden to the imaginations of a 19th century con man and all the shit that followed after.
Unless it forces forces them to secularize.
Sure.
If it waters down the Mormonism in Utah, that could be a good thing.
Right.
But that's a big if.
A huge if. I'm going to assume you've seen Star Wars Episode 5, A New Hope.
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, you know how Princess Leia says to Grand Admiral Tarkin, the tighter you grasp, the more the systems slip through your fingers.
Oh, I don't remember that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, it's right before he blows the fuck out of Alderaan.
Which is her home planet, right?
Right, exactly. So anyways, that's what the Mormon leadership is doing. They're hemorrhaging members left and right.
Yeah.
The internet really fucked the Mormon church because it's harder to hide all the bullshit. The leadership are old. They don't want to change. And so they're doubling down on stuff. For example, LDS women had been pushing back on the whole garments issue. People are saying, oh, you don't have to wear your garments all the time. You only have to wear them going to the temple. Mormon influencers showing their porn shoulders and wearing clothes that are obviously not garment friendly.
Porn shoulders.
Is that the first time you've heard porn shoulders?
I think it's the first time I've heard that.
I don't remember which general authority it was, but in some conference for women, he said, women, if you dress immodestly, you are becoming walking pornography. And that turned into, well, if you're dressed immodestly, showing your shoulders, porn shoulders. So anyways, the temple recommend questions. Do you wear your garments as commanded in the temple day and night? They removed the day and night portion. And so everybody's like, okay. And then within the last 6 months, the church said, no, you have to wear them day and night. Doubling down on these things that are driving people out.
Because we thought for a moment there that Nelson wanted to make the church into a regular denomination.
Well, he is, but he's not. Mormons used to really pride themselves on being a peculiar people.
Oh, they're peculiar, all right.
But the problem is been trying to make Mormons seem like every other Christian group. What's the point? Join another Christian group that isn't so weird.
Go somewhere where you can wear whatever you want. And
yeah.
The music's a bit happy clappier.
They recently redid the hymn book.
Ooh.
And they got rid of some of the traditional hymns that have been part of Mormonism forever and replaced them with very basic Christian hymns. There's nothing like, our God is an awesome God, he's a cunt, and fuck you. I mean, there are hymns that talk about Kolob.
Yeah, right.
You will never hear it sung in a Mormon meeting because it's fucking weird. If you could hide to Kolob in the twinkling of an eye, so if you could fly to God's magic planet.
You do know that our theme music is based on that hymn?
Yeah, I do.
I changed around a little bit, but it's...
Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah, it's still there, yeah.
Yeah, I've got one more clip,
yes.
And I don't really have a transition for it, but really just makes me so fucking mad. And so I titled this clip, Your God is a Cunt.
The problem of evil says, if God loves us and he has enough power to spare us from suffering, why in the world do we suffer? And it's based on an assumption that God's love is best manifest by sparing us from any trouble. That's not a safe assumption, right? That might not be what God is up to. William Clayton captured what God is up to really well in the hymn, Come, Come, Ye Saints. In that line when it says, grace shall be as your day. That as low as things got for Amanda Barnes Smith, and I don't know how they can get lower than that, that God's grace was sufficient for her day. He gave her everything she needed to make it through that unbelievably dark night of her soul. And we can trust that it will be true for us as well. Grace shall be as our day. And that grace comes from the Savior.
What a bunch of crap. You know what I hate about that most is it's double talk.
It is double talk.
I'm a big believer in the Sheryl Crow philosophy of good is good and bad is bad. You don't have to wonder. You know. You don't have to go, well, this is actually good for me, but it's really shit for me.
No.
And if that's God's idea of a good time, he can go fuck himself.
Exactly. And I'm sure you probably encountered this growing up in a religious household. I would get whopped when I misbehaved. One time, my dad even grabbed a board that had a scene of Noah's Ark painted on it and beat my ass with that.
Wow.
But his mom beat him so bad that she knocked out like 5 of his teeth. So,
Jesus Christ, that's child abuse.
It is.
Fucking
and,
hell.
But it was done for our benefit. It was supposed to teach us a lesson or something.
And that's hard to understand, isn't it?
It is. And it was always done because he was frustrated or angry.
Well, that's a shame.
I will fully admit that it's something that I had to overcome with my kids. I was like, okay, spanking, that's a good thing. And I remember the last time I ever spanked one of my children was my youngest, and he was about 3 or 4. And I just smacked him one time on the ass, and he had a red mark on his butt, the shape and size of my hand. I cried because I was like, oh my God, what the fuck have I done?
He probably doesn't even remember it.
Oh, no, he remembers it quite well. He thinks it's hilarious now. He's like, hey, Dad, do you remember that time you swore on my ass? Like, yes, son, I do remember that. And that's why I never spanked any of you ever again. And my little son, who's autistic, he had made me mad. He had done something that had caused my autism to have a meltdown, and I took it out on my son. And that is an asshole move. He was a kid doing what a kid does. I don't even remember what the fuck it was. It was probably something so incredibly stupid, like not going to bed in time or not listening when I told him something.
Right.
If I can recognize this, and I am an imperfect human, then God should be able to recognize that this is not the way to go.
Right. It's confusing for everyone.
Yeah, it is. And what about the people that have hard things happen to them and they die or end up on the street or in an institution? That didn't improve their lives. And what about the fuckers who are complete and utter assholes, get billions of dollars, make a stupid truck that looks like a dumpster on wheels, blow up rockets, and reject his trans kit? Shitty people get great things and great people get shitty things. And if that is the way that a perfect being is going to come up with things, well, he's a cunt and he can fuck off.
They were talking about the phrase that absolute power corrupts absolutely. Steve actually suggested it might be true for a human, but the only people who have absolute power, when they exercise it, they don't corrupt, because he's using God as proof of his argument.
Yeah.
What sort of an argument is that, Steve? You're using a supernatural, unprovable, unfalsifiable statement that only requires your faith to prove a point.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, just, oh.
Tell that to the victims of the Jewish Holocaust.
Right.
Tell that to the countless indigenous people who had other countries come in and in the name of God, wipe them out and steal their resources and enslave them.
I think we should call his God out, because I think his God is corrupted by all of this power.
So it's an interesting thought experiment, but
right.
I mean, the ultimate truth is, no, your God's fake. So let's not even have this.
Also in the middle layer, which I think is probably in DNC 121, the way Steve explained it, it sounded like Joseph essentially made a diss track.
Oh, yeah.
Former fellow servants who turned against him.
William W. Phelps testified against him. Thomas
Marsh. And Hyde.
These guys are his closest friends, right. And their testimony is used to throw him in this cell.
You can tell that the Lord is on Joseph's side about this. He says to Joseph, your friends stand by you. That implicates these people like Marsh and Hyde and other and Phelps. The Lord disqualifies them, at least for the time being, as Joseph's friends.
DNC 121 is.
Woe unto them, because they offended my little ones, and they will be severed from the ordinances of my house, and their basket shall not be full. I will give you their wives, and you can fuck their wives. And doesn't say, but.
No. Earlier on, when he was talking about how they tried to appeal Joseph stuck in the jail, to me it just sounded like old MacDonald had a farm. They appealed him there and appealed him there.
Here, here appeal, there, appeal, appeal, everywhere, appeal. Appeal.
Old Steve Harper had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, and on that farm he had appeal, E-I-E-I-O. They appealed, appealed here, and appealed, appealed there. Here appeal, there appeal. Nobody grants appeals. Old Steve Harper had a farm. E-I-E-I-O.
There was this whole section there in the middle where they were talking about how Mormons deal with the problem of evil.
They wallow in it.
They enjoy it almost. It's so distasteful. He spoke about it like it was a specifically LDS Mormon way of solving the problem. And I'm like, Steve, you've just explained it exactly the same way every other bloody church does.
If you're part of the one true church, the way you do things are unique. And you don't look at other churches because why would you? You have the one true gospel. It's entirely possible that he doesn't even realize other people deal with evil the same way.
He quotes this hymn that says, you will have grace enough for today. And then he brings back Amanda something or other that lost her husband and her son in Horns Mill.
Her son got his hip blown away, just like Trump got his ear blown away. 3 days later, there was maybe a scratch on it. You can't tell from the photograph. Yeah.
Steve, humans stay alive until they're dead. Are you saying that the fact that she's still alive is grace to get through to the next day? Well, there'll come a time when she dies. What's he getting? That.
What about her son and her husband?
Right. Did they not have grace for that day?
To slant Bednar, did they not have faith enough not to be killed?
Right.
They only apply it where it works in their favor, and they completely ignore the circumstances that happened at the exact same fucking place, Horns Mill, where 15 men and boys were murdered. God will never give you more than you can handle. Unless he does, but we're not going to talk about that.
Right, because I think that people do get more than they can handle and do die in horrible ways that they can't handle.
For example, people that are tortured will reach a point where they will do or say anything to end that torture.
Right.
Even if it means going completely against something sacred, because the human brain is programmed to survive.
And it's an absolute fairy tale for them to trottle out trite comments like, he'll always give you enough grace to get through it. What does that even mean? Steve, what a tool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a major story that we have left out of that episode, and that is the escape of Smitty.
Well, Joseph essentially bribed him. Two of the guards that they bribed provided them with a horse. He wrote a promissory note, and one of the guys
showed up at some Mormon camp a couple of years later.
Yeah, and said, hey, Joseph Smith said you need to give me money.
Well, let me tell you how it was worded in the episode.
So a couple of days into it, the sheriff tells Joseph and the others, we're going to get drunk, and you guys can do whatever you want. Joseph had arranged with one of the guards, apparently, to buy a couple of horses. Those horses help Joseph and the others to get safely out of Missouri while their guards are inebriated. The sheriff actually paid a dear price for that later on. He had turned friendly to Joseph and was willing to let him go.
From what I read, the sheriff was not keen about transporting Joseph Smith. In fact, there were points during the transportation where the sheriff was separated from Joseph and the prisoners by like 8 miles.
Wow, really?
He didn't want to be there.
No.
It was not the prisoners that came up with this. The sheriff and the guards proposed, give us some money, we'll let you escape.
Right.
It wasn't a negotiation. They just accepted the terms that were offered to them. If they were trying to represent the historical record as it actually happened, we wouldn't be talking about it because it wouldn't be a faith-affirming bullshit snow job.
Well, that's all I got out of that horrible episode with Steve Harper, and I'm so glad it's over. Thank you so much for the supreme sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck with your elections and talk to you again soon.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Patience.